Rambam says, Tumera Vaseitai. So first one has to start with Tumera, and then hopefully come to Aseitai. So we can't just start with Aseitai, we can't start in the middle. So consequently, tonight's share is about all the things we're not supposed to do for Pesach. Next week will be the things we're supposed to do. So tonight's share is called the Tumera. I'm not going to tell you how to cash your house tonight. I'm going to tell you the things not to do tonight. And why not to do them? Some are relevant. On one particular thing is relevant. On Pesach, it's also a thing not to do. What we shouldn't do, not. Now, the first question that arises is, we know one way or the other that we have to clean for Pesach. I was always wondering what it would be like if I'd be wealthy enough, if I had two houses, one for Pesach and one for a whole year, and that's it. And one I'd only use on Pesach, and I'd lock it up the next year, I'd walk in and lock up the other one, and that's the table would be set, all the dishes ready, just sit down. So I don't know, you know. If I had Mike Blumberg's money, I think I'd do it. I have to tell you the truth. You know, just for the experience to see what it's like. But, you know, it's not on the horizon yet. Not this year, at least. I don't know. My next year, maybe the Rebbeinu Shlomo Brocha will come, you know. But this year, it's not on the horizon. Now, since we have to clean for Pesach, so that is a very central question. And that question is, what we have to clean for Pesach? To what extent we have to clean for Pesach? And this is a very, very central issue. Because if we don't solve this problem, then we don't know what we're doing in the first place. Interestingly enough, is one very root issue, which has been very, very debated, as to what the halacha is. And we should take a little bit of look at what some of our great poskim have to say about this matter. And the Gemara says, we'll start a statement from the Gemara, Sochem, Davova Medbeis, Omrav Yehuda Omrav, Haboidik Tzorach Sheyivake. Back there. A person that does Bedikas Chometz must subsequently do Bittel. So my time, or what's the reason for it? The Gemara says, Inema Mishum Pirurim, if it's because of a concern that maybe he has crumbs left around his house after the Bedikas Chometz. So the Gemara says, Holoch Shivei. They have no significance whatsoever. So why should he have to do bittul for them? Why do you need a baidik tzoruch shiyavatl? For what reason? So, the question arises, do we actually have to remove tiny crumbs of chametz from our house? Now the Gemara then goes on to tell us what's the reason that we're concerned. We're concerned that a person may find a nice piece of chametz. That's what we're concerned about. So, and then if he hasn't done bittul, so maybe over by your or by your matzah. We saw in Tosfos at the beginning of the Masechta last week, we discussed the fact that why is it that if I have to do bittul, and that's mandatory, so why do I have to bother with Bedikas Chametz? Just do Bittul and forget about it. Bedikas Chametz is a pretty tough mitzvah. So the answer to that is that we're afraid, that I may come to eat a piece of Chametz. If I just did Bittul Chametz, and I left left the Chametz all over my house, I'd be out to the Dinder Isa. Well, good. So right now, I'll make the knedlich for the Seder over here, and over here, I'll have a loaf of bread. What's the problem? I don't own it. I was mabatel it, or sell it to a guy. I'll do all that. But I'll just leave it on the other side of the counter. This part of the counter will be for the chametz, and this one will be for the Pesach. That's all. It's a big problem. So we're concerned that since we eat chametz the whole year, shamo yobo le'ochlo, that we may come to eat it. So now the question is, how does this impact on Peru? And tiny crumbs of chametz. So I did bittul chametz. Do I have to be concerned that I'm also going to eat tiny crumbs of chametz or not? So based on this Gemara seems to imply that crumbs are insignificant. Because the Gemara says, Halach Shiva. Why, if I did Bedikas Chametz, I shouldn't even bother to do business with those types of Chametz. If they're insignificant, and really a person wouldn't look at them, so then let's take it from the other standpoint. If I did Bidl Chametz, so do I really have to be concerned I'm going to come to eat this piece of Chametz? So the Chofetz Chaim at one point in the Mishnah does address this. It's in Tuf Lamed Gimel. I want to put down the Maramakayim, so the sources of the Shir will be available to those that want them. It's in Siman Tov Lamed Gimel, in the Shar Tzion, Os Lamed Gimel. And he talks about a situation where a person lived in a rural place, not in an urban setting as we do, and where they had chickens running around the house. Not so far off. You know, my grandfather's house, they used to have live chickens every Thursday before he shechted them. So, if you have chickens running around the house, then do you have to do Bedikat Chametz on your dining room, or not? So the Chofetz Chaim suggests, Vodin Karka Bayesha Tanagolim Mitzuyim Shalom, if you have chickens running around in your house, that you don't have to do Bedikat Chametz on the floor. Why? So he says a number of reasons. And one of the reasons that he tells us, besides the fact that the animals obviously may eat the crumbs, but all that fell down are crumbs. Nothing more than crumbs fell down. And consequently, since nothing more than crumbs fell down, Dumarak Perurim, the Mamela Batali, they're bottled in and of themselves. There's no necessity to do bitl for Perurim. So here the Chofetz Chaim opts in the Mishnah Berurah for the position that crumbs are insignificant. We don't have to do Bedikas Chametz for crumbs. Especially the crumbs that we don't know if we have or we don't have altogether. Interestingly, he wrote a sefer. Chofetz Chaim was a very compassionate Jew, and he loved everybody. And he tried to help every type of Jew to succeed, to be Oyved Hashem. And in his time, it was common for Jews to be drafted into the army. So therefore, he wrote an entire sefer called Machne Yisrael, how a Jew should conduct himself under the unique circumstances of the military, of a non-Jewish military, so that he should be Shomer HaLochas on a military base. So he addresses the Indian of Pesach in this situation. Now, Pesach in a non-Jewish military base is a rather daunting challenge. I mean, you're going to live in a barracks with Goyim. They're going to have chametz, be eating chametz. How exactly are you going to observe Pesach in this milieu? So the Chofetz Chaim writes that he should do bedikas chametz on his possessions, and he should remove every crumb of chametz. That's what the Chofetz Chaim writes. And he discusses the Gemara, and he tries to say the Gemara is not a riot, that you don't have to, and he leaves it at that. So we have two conflicting views from the Chofetz Chaim. In the Mishnah Berurah, he says, Perurim HaMameila Batma. In Machne Yisrael, he says that the crumbs, that one should do B'dikas Chametz and get rid of them. Rav Moshe Feinstein, Zecher Tzadik L'Vrocha Nezikros Moshe, writes that there's no necessity to do Bedikas Chametz for crumbs. Based on the same rationale as the Chofetz Chaim, they're insignificant. Who's going to pick them up and eat them? So what do we have to do Bedikas Chametz for? So he says, we have to do Bedikas Chametz. It doesn't have to be a kezayas. It's a whole piece of bread. But something significant enough that it's appealing for us to pick up and to eat. You know, a candy is something significant. It's not a kezayas. It could be very small. But it's appealing. A fraction of a Cheerio or a piece of crumb of the bread that fell in the, you know, behind the cushion of the chair, you know, al pidin, there's no need to remove it from Moshe Paschal. It's lachatchila, we're not talking about the other. We could perhaps suggest that the Chofetz Chaim, in fact, is not at all in dispute, and there's no stira in the Chofetz Chaim's writings. The Chofetz Chaim, I presume, holds that Be'ikar Adin is what he wrote for the Klal Yisrael of the Mishnah Berurah. That Perurim Ameila Batli, there's no necessity to look for tiny crumbs. But the Chofetz Chaim was uniquely aware of the particular circumstances of a soldier. When a person is in a situation when his observance is somewhat compromised, for circumstances beyond his control, so a person needs very special chizuk. He needs very special measures to make sure that he's not nichshol. It's very easy on our homes, Baruch Hashem, by the time you get the yontif, not to eat chametz. A whole yontif is relatively easy to do. I mean, Baruch Hashem, there's no chametz around. It's all locked away, it's sold, it's burnt. And after all of that effort that we put into this piece of yontif, who in their right mind wants to eat a piece of chametz? What did I bother this whole thing for if I'm going to do that? But in a situation where a person cannot control the fact that he's going to be exposed to chametz all around him from his non-Jewish comrades, so there the Chofetz Chaim felt that he should be super machmer, to be very, very much on guard from every tiny bit of chametz should set him off, so that he should be careful not to grab something, you know, from the army's food, a piece of old bread that's going to be all over the place during Yom Tov and eat it. So I don't see it as a steerer. I see that the Chofetz Chaim felt under that unique circumstance where a person had to be relatively lax for circumstances beyond his control in the military, so where it was possible to be machmer, he was very, very machmer. And this type of yisoid was very, very axiomatic to the halacha. And there's an incident I met one time, Dr. Yosef Berg, Golov HaSholom, the Tsar of the Mizrahi Tsar. He was once here in Kew Garden Hills. And I have to tell you, out of curiosity, I wanted to meet him. He's a famous personality in the Jewish world. And I wanted to meet him one time. He was right here in the neighborhood. It wasn't too hard. So I went to, the Rabbonim had a meeting with him, and I went to meet him. And he related the following story, which really bears out exactly this he said. So the time was 1938, the city was Prague, and it was already, unfortunately, under Nazi occupation, Yimach Shemon V'Zichron. And there were Jews that had the opportunity to leave. A train was leaving Friday night, which would bring them to Yugoslavia. And Yugoslavia, they had to leave Friday night to go to Yugoslavia, because in Yugoslavia, the ports were closed on Sunday, officially. So the ports were very, very quiet. And because of that, with a small amount of bribes, they could have a ship come and load up people and set off illegally for Eretz Yisrael, which during the weekdays would have been an impossibility because the port was teeming with people. They could never get away with doing such a thing. So they had to leave Friday night from Prague. So he mentioned the name of the Rav in Prague. I don't remember the name. He knew exactly who the Rav was. A Charbon and a Charedish, a Rabbon in Prague. And they went to ask him a shayla if the people are allowed to go on this train and travel to Yugoslavia. So he said it's pikuach nefesh, and they have to go. But he said one thing I tell them, all of them, is that every person that goes on this train, because he was meikel, he was lenient, for b'mokom pikuach nefesh, but he was lenient in Shmira Shabbos, for the rest of his life, he has to enhance the Shmira Shabbos in some way. Some way. So a person that wasn't mekayim shnayim mikravecha targum should undertake that every Shabbos will be mekayim shnayim mikravecha targum. He should learn hilchos Shabbos. He should be a little bit more nizer in Shabbos for the rest of his life, because he was once meikel. A similar yisoid, where we are forced to be meikel, there sometimes we have to strengthen ourselves with an extra degree of being machmer to counterbalance that. And I believe that's probably what the Chofetz Chaim meant, why in Machmer Yisrael he chose this psak to be machmer. And there's a shayla nachrayim. It touches a very classical question, and in a very simple sense. Is it necessary to do bedikas chometz on tzvah? Very practical question. And there were many machmirim in the shayla, practical. Many rabbonim did bedikas chometz on the tzvah. We don't find clearly that one has to. I mean, clearly it's debated. I mean, what we do know clearly, but certainly is important, l'chol hadeis, is that tzvahim that we bring to the table during the year, that we cannot bring them to the table during Pesach. And I would suggest even if we clean them out, because who knows if we can clean out of the binding of a sefer and the pages that every day were the fold of every page, every tiny crumb of chametz that's there. So that certainly is an inyan where we have to be nizer. But if I'm not bringing it to the table, so what do I have to do inside of sefer? You can't have anything more than the tiniest of crumbs. So what's the necessity of doing bedikas chametz for it? The Chazon Ish was personally very, very machmer upon himself. But the Chazon Ish was, as we call him, Hachosid the Chazon Ish. He was very unique, not only in his learning and his avodah too. So Pesach, before Pesach, he prepared a small number of svarim, and those are the only svarim that he used yontif. And the rest of the svarim he covered over his bookcase, and that's it. He didn't use the svarim. But I once told the Chavina Rav that, you know how much the Chazon Ish respect you, of the few svarim that he kept out for Pesach was your sefer he kept on the table. That's his unique respect for you. So the Shavina Rav, being a very modest man, says, I have to tell you the truth, but you know why the Chazon Ish kept out my sefer? He says, that's only a simon that he never looks at it during the year, so there's no shot of having comments in it. So svarim, we certainly do not have them, particularly in today's world. Baruch Hashem, we're blessed that we have svarim in abundance. In my childhood, nobody had, except very rare individuals, anywhere near the amount of svarim that's in the average Jewish home today. I mean, they weren't in print. I once went to look for a sefer in Yerushalayim that I wanted to buy in Sefer Or HaChaim, and I discovered that it hadn't been printed in a few hundred years. And the only available copy, or at least the only was a copy, was from the first edition. And if I had the psahon to offer us a huge amount of money to pay for it, I could have bought it. So I waited, and eventually it was reprinted and put out. But svarim, we have Baruch Hashem svarim leroyim. So to undertake to clean out every sefer is not practically possible. I mean, what we do have to do is we have to go to the bookcases, that's true, and see that we didn't put some chametz on top of them in between the svarim. That's something else that we have to take care of. Any place that we might have gone with chametz. But to undertake in our circumstances to clean for every tiny drop of chametz that might exist, one that certainly is something that we would never pick up to eat, is beyond the pale. We're not going to succeed, and we're just going to drive ourselves nuts.
Except for like
benches, you shouldn't use altogether. Benches, you should lock benches over the bread. Benches are a piece of bread. So benches may have a kazayah chametz in there. Forget that. I've got pirunim of chametz in benches. You know, I live in our house. You know, always we lock the benches up for yontif. Pesach are special benches for yontif. We keep it the Pesach kela. They never see the light of day the whole year. Otherwise, we don't. You know what? You wouldn't think of taking out a bench during the year. Now, this also dictates you don't have to go around the house at the edges of the carpet that maybe a tiny hair for chewy or fell under the edges of the carpet. But, you know, I didn't say you shouldn't vacuum clean it, and that's all. But you don't have to go look. Now, there's a practice that totally escapes me, and you can even find it, and some people tell you to do such a thing. It escapes me. I have never been able to fathom it. I still cannot fathom it. We have kelim that we're going to put away for Yom Tov. Chametz tikka kelim, dishes, pots, pans, etc. Yeah. Maybe it's some of them another 1,000% clean. There's a tiny drop of chametz left on them. You know, we sometimes we even have a toaster. And we shook it out. But inside, inevitably, there are a few crumbs left somewhere in there, inevitably. Of what rhyme or reason is there that I should try to clean every last tiny drop of chametz out of it? We're taking it, we're putting it away with chametz dikka kelim. We're selling any chametz that's left anyhow. In case the guy wants to buy it, if there's anything to buy, we're selling it to him anyhow. So for what reason in the world should I be doing cleaning every piece of chametz out? And I'm even talking that even to a person that's machmer not to sell chametz gomer, these things have no chshivas. And most people that do sell chametz gomer is alachas kamer v'kamer. A box of macaroni they put into the closet. Chametz dikka cookies are in the closet. So now that there's five more crumbs of last year's bread, that's something I have to be machmer, I have to throw out. Ich kann es nicht verstehen. My cup doesn't understand it, I have to tell you. I've never been able to grasp it. What? The problem is, people would do it, what people do, mamela, that doesn't concern me. People are holy, they have holy desires. But, you know, when you start appearing in svarim, this is disturbing. But be that as it may, I don't know. My cup does not tell you for
something. Okay, so let's say that you put away the toaster
Some of them be crumbs in. Some of them, listen, if you machmer and chametz goes, be sure there's not a kazayef chametz in it. And that's
otherwise,
not oimid lachila, it's not oimid for anything. I don't even know if you don't sell chametz gomer, why you can't sell it, if there's anything the guy wants to buy. So exactly. So I'm saying, anyhow you did bittul. So you can't be nichshel on a deraisa, no matter how hard you try. And if there are more of eating it, you're also not going to do so. What's the problem? I'm just saying, for the same reason the Gemara says you don't even have to do bittul because they have no chshivas, they're totally insignificant. The Gemara says you don't have to bother with bittul on a crumb. There's no difference between open and close. You know what is? I'll tell you, it's very interesting. One of my rabbeim taught me once that every misconception in the halacha has a root in the halacha too. Every misconception is rooted somewhere in the halacha. So sometimes he would try to figure out why people thought a certain way, what Gemara it must have come from. Very interesting. So I'll tell you where this comes from. This comes in life, the inverse is not always true. The halacha states the following, that if I have an ingredient which is 100% kosher for Pesach, but it's an open package of food, so the halacha is that I'm not allowed, it's halacha in the Shulchan Aruch, I'm not allowed to use it for Yom Tov. Anything which was used around Chometz, unless there's some way I can clean it out, etc. But other than that, an open package of food is not supposed to be used on Yom Tov. It's in the Shulchan Aruch. Why? Because we hold, the halacha states, not like the Shultis, that even the tiniest bit of chametz on Pesach is a very severe problem. It's not bottled. That's why you can't bring a sefer to the table on Yom Tov that had chametz, because if one crumb of chametz, chalila, falls into the food is trafe, the plates are trafe. It's a big problem. So, therefore, if something which was used around chametz, so maybe a drop of chametz fell into it. I had a chaver once who was for a year or so, he was in he opened the butcher store. So he comes to me before the other time, this time of the year, and he says to me, Herschel, he says, what in the world you got to do to make a butcher store kosher? You know, they always hang signs kosher on Pesach. He says, I've been thinking about it. All I can figure is the following. He says, you got to sweep the floor, stop eating your lunch in the back, and raise the prices. That's it. You know, that's what you got to do to make the store kosher on Pesach. What else are you supposed to do? So his point, though, in the fact that that's the one thing that has to be nizer, or what changes from Pesach to the whole year, is you have to be careful at a butcher shop that you don't eat lunch in the back when you're preparing. That's the whole thing that changes. So that's where it comes from. It's a halacha of Pesach that open Pesach dikka food can't be used on Yom Tov if we use it during the year. But the inverse, the fact if we had open chametz dikka food, so put it away. What's the difference open chametz dikka food? They didn't have a package. Can I sell a loaf of bread? Heilige Yidden, and Yidden the Heilige people, used to, I'll come back to Moshe Mazeda, in his era in America, when he came to this country 80 years ago, 70 years ago, the norm was that before Yom Tov, he bought chametz, and he locked it up and he sold it. Why? Because the grocery business in this town has typically been a very Jewish business, and particularly in Jewish ethnic neighborhoods. But many of the people, most of the storekeepers, were not from. So he was concerned that after Yom Tov is going to come and he's going to wind up with chametz over Olam HaPesach, who violate an Easter in the Shulchan Aruch. So he says, there's one way that he knows he's not going to violate it, because he'll buy a bit of all the things that he needs after Yom Tov. He'll own them, he'll lock them up, and he'll sell them. He knows it's the only thing that he knows is not chametz over Olam HaPesach. This was a very common practice in the American Jewish scene. 70, 80 years back, pre-World War II. They didn't have the luxury of being machmer, of only going chumra, of not selling chametz gomer. Because one thing they have to know, there's a statement I saw from a politician many, many years ago, and it struck me, and I've remembered it throughout my life. And his notion was, he says, let not the good be the hostage of the ideal. Sometimes we want to strive for the best of all worlds. And while we're striving for all worlds, not only don't we accomplish that, we don't even accomplish the good either, that we could. And in the halacha, we always have to be careful about that. We may strive to be mekayim the din at the highest, 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 highest level. But while I'm striving to do that, I may not succeed in being mekayim the din altogether. You know, an Odom Godel once said, you know, people might strive to be machmer certain chumras. But while they're striving to be machmer in those chumras, they're going to go to people that are not swift about being mekayim the dinim and the shulchan aruch. So they're going to wind up, they're going to be mekayim the chumra, and they'll eat chametz on Pesach at the same time. Yeah, they were mekayim, they decided a certain chumra is where it's at. So yeah, where they bought, they were mekayim that chumra. Everything else that's in the shulchan aruch, all the way up to that chumra, they went to places that weren't so swift. People that weren't so swift, didn't know the dinim, weren't so didactic. So it's true, so they ate chametz on Pesach, would certainly do, you know, very nice. So that's what we always have to be careful about, and we have to judge b'chol dor v'dor which are the chumras that we can achieve, and which, if we attempt to achieve, we're going to sacrifice the Ikar Adin. So the Cheshbon 70, 80 years ago, pre-World War II, was that Rabbi Machman Chometz Rav Olam HaPesach, and not worry about selling Chometz Gomer on Pesach. Baruch Hashem, we live in an era where we could be Mekayim Shneim. Baruch Hashem, we have no shortage of Shomer Shabbos, Erelech HaYidin in the grocery business today. So we don't have any problem buying things which are clearly not chametz over Olam HaPesach. We have clearly non-Jewish markets available to us too, if we need, you know, not out of this area, but places we can buy which are sure owned by non-Jews, which also don't have a problem. So we have the luxury of being Mekayim, all that's told them in the din. So, let's go forward a little bit. Mechiras Chometz, I don't want to deal with Mechiras Chometz in terms of itself. It's a very rabbinic matter, and it's a very fascinating subject. And I like to discuss that, I do have responsibility for it, but it's not my subject that I want to touch upon tonight. I want to touch upon the practical implications of Mechiras Chometz. There are practical implications of Mechiras Chometz. First of all, I touch with the fact that we have kelim that we sell. Now, let's go back. Should we sell the kelim or not, the chometz to the kelim? Let's start with that question. And one should be very careful when one sells one's chometz, that one does not sell his chometz to the utensils. There is controversy in the poskim about the consequences of that, maybe. The Chazon Ish, Zecher Tzadik Livracha, one of probably the handful of one of the few greatest poskim of the 20th century, paskened that if one sells one's chometz to a non-Jew before Pesach time, it is mechuyev to do tefillas kelim after yontov when he buys them back. Ad kedei kach, unequivocally. So the last thing that we want to do is to sell our kelim to a non-Jew. Furthermore, why in the world would we want to sell the kelim? So let's examine that proposition for a moment, because this is also instructive. There may be chometz which is still adhering to those kelim. So that suffices to sell that chometz. So we sold that chometz. So what do I have to sell the kelim for? Now one might ask me, how about the chometz which has been absorbed by the kelim? I cooked farina. I cooked spaghetti in this pot. I would absorb it. It's a chometz thicker pot. Now, what are the consequences of that? Well, here again we find varied opinions, apparently. And then we'll talk about halacha l'maisa. In Siman Tov Mem Zayin, we find the following. Mil kelim shenis bashel b'hem mutorim l'achar ha-pesach v'in tzorach shvira o ha-gol. If one cooked chometz in a pot on Pesach, someone's allowed to keep that pot until after yontov. There's no necessity. Chometz shavar l'av ha-pesach. If I owned a piece of chometz and I find it after yontov and I hadn't sold it, so I'm chuyev to burn it, to destroy it. But if I have a utensil, a pot, I cooked spaghetti in it, I'm not mechuyev to do anything with it after yontov. I can use the pot. And he writes the following: the Chofetz Chaim. This is in Tov Mem Zayin Siv Dalet. And he quotes this: "Ken kosvu harbe achreinim. Afilu bishlu b'hem b'pesach atzma chometz shayisrael harbe." I made a mistake on yontov and I took out the chometz stick of spaghetti. Now I have kosher pesach spaghetti. I took out the chometz stick of spaghetti and I cooked it. A big tub full of it. And Baruch Hashem, before I eat it, I realized this is the chometz, and this is not the Pesach sticker stuff. So, throw it out, we get rid of it, fine, we destroy it. Now, what do I do with the pot? The pot has absorbed a huge pile of chometz right on Yom Tov itself. The first day Chalamot. What do you do? Afilu hochem utorim achar ha-Pesach. Sha'azkar einam b'nei yuman. Because after Pesach, they haven't been used today. Although shayach nigz l'mix or hocha otu b'nei yuman. Because after Pesach, everything is mutter, so the normal gzeirah doesn't apply. Those are kol mutter. Barak, he says the first. So now we ask the following question: Barak is shemasha yisom, so if the shavshav heite v'chometz ben, I have to clean them well during yontif, so I shouldn't keep pieces of chometz in the pot over yontif. Shelo yeh nikar v'hem, that it shouldn't be obvious this is chometz that he didn't sell, so I have to get rid of what I can. Now he writes the following. Well, how about all the chometz that it absorbed? It's today. It's not even yesterday. Yesterday, 24 hours, l'meil. Or b'shem ha-balua, because of the chometz which has been absorbed by kelim, eino eivah v'bal yiroh. There's no isa b'al yiroh. V'masha masha oisam k'mo shekosu b'simen tof nun aleph. Here the Chofetz Chaim passed in the Simen Tof Mem Zayin, that were all the chametz which was absorbed by a kli, even if it's fresh chametz, I cooked it today in the middle of Pesach. There can't be a worse situation than that. There's nothing that I have to do about it. See that the pot is clean and put it away until after Yom Tov, and that's it, and everything's fine. Everything is fine. Now, in Tov Nun Aleph, he brings, almost not surprised, the Levush and his Perushim has always had a tendency to creativity. And the person that came after the Levush had a very, very hard time deciphering the Levush for that reason. Because his explanations, he gave explanations for all types of halachas. And a lot of them are very, very unique and very creative. And the Poiskim is well known, the Shach oftentimes find some of them hair-raising. Now here we have one, I wouldn't say that it's hair-raising, but it's rather surprising. Here he writes the following. In Tov Nun Aleph, you have the following halacha. Kedeva shel cheres, if one has earthenware pots. So earthenware pots, we know, we cannot kasha earthenware for Pesach, and I just would note that we don't kasha glass kela for Pesach either. A whole year, meikar adin, and maybe even halacha lemaisa, there's no necessity to kasha glass. The whole Indian that the Rabbonim in this area were done on a few years ago, and we all came to the conclusion that there's no necessity, a number of us were done on it, and there's no necessity of doing kashering for them. And one of the Rabbonim went even to Yester Fischer Hershkowitz, the closer of Gedayim Shlita, what he had to say about it. And he looked at him and he says, what's wrong with you? He says, not in the minute. He says, the minute of Klal Yisrael is not to bother to kasher them during the year. Milif and slavery, whatever you did with them, you don't kasher them. They're kosher. It's 100% fine. There's nothing to talk about. On Pesach, though, the Ramah were machmer. We do not use glass. We do not kasher even glass, which was used the whole year. The chametz. So what do we do? Now I have a pot, an earthenware pot. A karel, it's not kasherable for Yom Tov, for example. Kedeiro shacheresh and ishtamesh b'hem chometz kol ha'shom. Kloimar dozen bluum harbe chometz. They absorb the great deal of chometz. V'm yivashem b'hem achar ha'pesach. And if you're cooking them after Pesach, b'vard alu yashishem negdom. They're not going to have 60 times in the content, 60 times more than the walls themselves contain. Afilu hochi mutter. You can use these pots after Pesach without any reason. V'atam. What's the reason for this? There's a dispute in the Gemara if someone actually owned chometz on Pesach, why it's osur after Pesach. Rabbi Yehuda says the same way that chometz is osur is allowed to eat chometz on Pesach, allowed with karas, after Yom Tov, I presume it is allowed without karas. But it's allowed, it's a full-fledged isa deraisa, like eating a piece of chazon. We don't fasten like that. We fasten like Rav Shimon, that Minatayra, there is no Easter on Chometz Rabbul over Pesach. It is merely a rabbinic penalty which they impose, so that people should not want to violate the Easter. Because after Pesach, the Chometz will still be awesome. So therefore, he says, Ve'enu Oster Ela Mishum Knosso, the Kontzuch HaChomet, that he kept the Chometz. And this is Ela HaChomet Shu Be'et, Avala Mashal Belua Be'kli, like Kontzuch, they didn't give a Knos. There's no Knos. And this he quotes from the Levush. Now, the implication of this statement is that there's really a problem in keeping around there's a problem with what's Belua. But that really doesn't fit into the Shulchan Aruch, because the Shulchan Aruch is Mutala Shoshim L'Achara Pesach. You're allowed to keep them around. So how does this fit back into the Shulchan Aruch? If it's Mutter because there's no sanction against Chometz which has been absorbed. In other words, Chometz which is now invisible, it's just absorbed into something else, there's no sanction on that, then what's the problem? What do I have to tell you? There's no knas, there's no reason to give a knas. And if there is a reason not to do it, and it's just after Yom Tov we don't give a knas, so why does the Shulchan Aruch say I'm allowed to keep them on Yom Tov? Your guess is as good as mine. I don't know the pshat. This little pshat. But this is also at odds with what we saw the Mishnah wrote in Siman Tov Mem Zayin, where we quote Tarbiyah. I believe halacha lemaisa, what we remain with, is absorbed chometz. There's no quest, there's no problem by your own, by your motzi in the first place on it. There's no iser on it. It doesn't have to be sold. So you don't even have to write into the shtar that the chometz is balu on the kelim that you're selling that either. That you also don't have to sell. Also not necessary to do. So we shouldn't sell the kelim that we have. That we certainly shouldn't do, because then we'll really make the trouble for ourselves. And there's no necessity to sell anything which has been absorbed by the kelim. So that also we don't have to deal with. Now, let's deal with a situation which should not happen, but unfortunately from time to time it does. There's a siman in the Shulchan, siman tof mem vav in the Shulchan Aruch, deals with the fact of what happens if I find a piece of chametz on Pesach. Happens. People find a piece of chametz on Pesach. What do you do with it? So we have less problem with it. We did bechiras chametz, so we're certainly not going to be over by your own, by your motzei on it. That's true. But what do we do with it? So the halacha states that, and certainly when there's no bayiro, bayimotzi, certainly in that case, I should cover it on yontif. If it's mukta, I'm not allowed to touch it. It was a very interesting rabbinic practice. In Europe, the chickens a lot of times came, because they came with all the feathers and everything else, sometimes at kernels of wheat that were still adhering to the body. So it was not unusual for someone to come with a shayla, something had become chametzik on Pesach, because it's such a shayla, they'd come, yes, the rov a shayla. So before the rov would issue the psak, the rov would tell the person to put the pot down someplace. Because otherwise the rov would have had it been stuck. If you put it down on the rov's table, and the rov passed it that it's chametzik, it's mukzik, it couldn't move it for the rest of the under, and you're stuck with a pot of chametz on his table. So the rov had to make sure that he told the guy to put where to put the shaylus down before it was done on the shaylus. So if he passed an usher, it was a place where he could leave it, you know, till chalamay came and he could get rid of it. This is a very common rabbinic practice. So the halacha states when chalamay, so on yontif it's mukta, so I just have to cover it over with something else so that I realize that this is not something I'm supposed to be eating. I won't make a mistake and come to eat it. And when chalamayid comes, I'm supposed to take it out and burn it. That's a mafurash halacha in the Shulchan Aruch. Now, if one follows that halacha exactly as written in the Shulchan Aruch, I believe not only hasn't one done a mitzvah, one has actually violated an iser too. Now, how can I say such a thing? The Shulchan Aruch says you're supposed to do it. Very simple. I had a question which for a long time was, that I used to torment many of my rabbinic colleagues with this question. And the question was a very simple question. Nowadays, Mechiras Chometz is a universal practice. What Yid doesn't do Mechiras Chometz? Even if he doesn't intend to do Mechiras Chometz, we'll come back to that in a moment, but he does Mechiras Chometz anyhow, because I don't want to sell Chometz Gomer. Well, what happens if I missed a piece of Chometz Gomer? I missed a slice of bread under the table, under the couch. I don't want to be nichshol in the Yisus, so we sell everything. And it's very, very necessary, because as we noted last week, if I merely did bittul chametz, and I would find a piece of chametz there to pay, so the chametz is osur banon. So the shalmi is born in siman tov mem ches. So it's very, very necessary to do mechiras chametz in case we err. So now that I did mechiras chametz, I said, I asked many, many rabbonim. So tell me, so why in the world am I burning up the chametz that I find on Pesach? Maybe, you know, let's suppose I'm a person who actually sells real chametz on Pesach. So Meikar Adin, you're allowed to sell real chametz. From Moshe Zatzal wrote that why did they make Mechiras chametz? Dafka was made to sell chametz gomer. That's what they made the takano. That's what it was created for in the first place. So good. So I said, do you have any inclination on chalamay that maybe you should open up the closet where you put the guy's chametz and take out the 10 boxes of macaroni and the 3 boxes of cookies and make a big bonfire outside the house and burn them up? I don't know, I never heard in my life anyone went to do such a boy, because it's the goy's chametz. Well, the slice of challah that I left under the couch is also the goy's chametz. Because in the shtar, when we sell chametz, we write generally where the chametz is. And even if we write among the yekis, they're more careful, they write exactly, it's in this closet, in this place. Acharekich lois hakol, you have a catch-all phrase. And b'chol mokum shehim, wherever that chametz may be, why? And that's the reason that I tend to be very non-specific about the places where the chametz is in my shtar mechira. Because the more one is specific, it almost indicates that I'm excluding something that's someplace else. This closet, and this closet. That's what I'm selling. Well, how about the slice of bread under the couch that I forgot about? Well, if I listed chametz generally, I'm selling. So, b'chol mokum shehim, wherever it is. But if I'm highly specific, it lends itself to the interpretation that I'm not selling the odd piece of chametz that I forgot about. I am non-specific in my shtar for that reason, about the exact places where it is. But beintach or beintach, you have to have a catch-all phrase of b'chol mokum shehem, wherever the chometz may be. So, and wherever the chometz may be, it's not only that that chometz is sold to a non-Jew, but the place where that chometz is resting, I rented a non-Jew to for the duration of Yom Tov. So the chometz is not in my rishus. The chometz is owned by a non-Jew. So on what basis should I pick up the chometz and burn it? Either I'm a ganav or a gazlo. You know, pashtus advarim, if I put a match to it where it is and I don't pick it up, so I'm a mazik. And if I pick it up and then I burn it, then I'm a mazik. The Gemara says in Bava Kamma, Daf Tzadik Ches, that if I pick up someone else's possession and I throw it into the river, I'm a ganav. Once I picked it up and became a ganav, I picked it up not to give it back to him and I threw it into the yam, I'm not a mazik, I'm even a ganav besides, I'm a thief. So if one finds such a piece of chometz on Pesach, what one ought to do with it is cover it over with something which is obviously doesn't need for Pesach, a paper plate, something that is not going to use beyond it. And Chalamoid, he should pick it up and put it away, open up the closet where he put the chometz that he sold, put it into that closet and lock the closet up again. That's what a person should do. It's the guy's chometz. I have no right, not only am I not mechuyev, I have no right to burn it on Yom Tov. So this I tormented many of my colleagues, and I believe, subsequently I saw in the Sefer of Rav Tzvi Pesach Frank, I believe he is the one that says, this is the, well, once we instituted Mechiras Chometz, that obviously the halacha of burning up the chometz has lapsed. This is a very, very crucial point, one that happens from time to time, and we have to know how to observe the halacha. Now when it comes to Mechiras Chometz, what do we sell and what don't we sell? So we'll start first of all with the dinners, and then we'll go to all the chumras. But first let's start with the din. The din is that one is allowed to sell chometz even if it's a loaf of bread. The real mekoy, no shaila that it's chometz, I'm allowed to sell it. That's the din. That's the halacha. The person sold it, he's a fine erlich hayid, and he's mekayim the din, and he can eat it after Yom Tov when the rov buys it back. And that's the halacha. Moshe articulated it as a talent of tshuva. It's a very self-evident halacha, very clearly known halacha. All the classical shtoros of Mechiras Chometz, specifically listed Chometz Gomer, they sold full-fledged, then all types of teruvis and everything else under the sun. But the starting point was real Chometz, the real Mekoy. There's a root notion of Mechiras Chometz we find all the way back in the Tanoim already. There was such things went on. The difference is that it's probably only for about two centuries that it's become a common communal practice. Throughout history it was done if a person had to do Mechiras Chometz, let's say he owned a brewery or a bakery or whatever, so he got a private guy and he made a Mechiras Chometz together with him privately. That's what he did. It's about two centuries approximately that we instituted communal Mechiras Chometz. That the Rav, you go to the Rav, and we authorize the Rav to serve as our agent, and the Rav sells the chometz for us. Yeah. Among those that had concerns about the validity of the Mechiras Chometz was the Vilna Gaon. The Vilna Gaon was not happy with the Mechiras Chometz. There are a lot of technical issues that one could raise about the Mechiras Chometz, a lot of technical issues about it. Rav Yosher Ber Soloveitcher, that tells a lengthy exposition on it with all many of his concerns that he had of why he questioned. He was not 100% happy with the Mechiras Chometz altogether. But beyond that, there's one overarching concern. And the question is, for a sale to be a sale of anything, so the first thing that we have to have is that a person makes an absolute decision to sell something. If I sell something and I don't mean to sell it and I have no intention to sell it and you don't intend to buy it, so exactly what type of sale is this? And this is the real problem. The biggest problem that we have is if the non-Jew would come around, you know, if the kids go to camp in the summertime, so you know you have to prepare their trunks, the things, and some trucking company comes to your house at some unearthly hour, and they collect the baggage and they dump it into some big truck, and hopefully it comes out on the other end in the kids' camp. Now, if we did the same thing with Mechiras Chometz, we'll say, okay, Rabbi Yisai, on Yud Gimel Nisan, everybody has to have the Chometz boxed up with your name on it and your address, And that's it. And the moving comes, movers are coming, and they're going to haul it out and haul it away. And that's it. And say so long to your chametz. They're buying the chametz. Then we would have no problem with the validity of a mechiras chametz. And we would know this. And the non-Jew is fully entitled to raid what he wants, what he has, and to give back what he wants and not give back what he wants. And if the yontif would come and your five best bottles of scotch disappeared, so after that you'd know it. This is for real, this mechiras chametz. But that's not what happens. It's just logistically too difficult to achieve that end. So we have the Achronim designed a way to sell the chametz by technical means where it does not actually go into the possession of the non-Jew. So this leaves a question concerning it. Well, did the parties to the deal fully intend to make this deal? And for those type of concerns, the Vilna Gaon, was unusually machmer. Rav Moshe wrote in a tshuva that he could not imagine any reason why, even if a person didn't want to sell chametz gomer, that he shouldn't eat chametz which was sold after Pesach. He said he could not imagine why one would have such a practice. That's what he wrote in the tshuva. And yet, in the writings of Rav Chaim Volozhin, we find in Ma'aser Rav, in Kesser Roish, that the Vilna Gaon was so machmer concerning the mechiras chametz that he would not eat chametz after Pesach which was sold. That's how concerned he was with the validity of the sale. So that's the Vilna Gaon is really the polar position, really, on the opposite end of the Ikradin. And then the gradations, many, so that is fulfilled by many. Many do it at Yisrael particularly, and they don't use chametz which are sold on Pesach. Flour is really only a Suffolk chametz, according to the Birurim that we have, so one could use after Pesach flour, which had been sold on Pesach. You go to the bakery and buy fresh bread, it's not a problem, even according to that minute. Now, there are many that split it. They don't actually sell chametz gomer, because if the sale is not a good sale, I violate the lava by your raw, by your motzi, two lava. Whereas for after Pesach, whereas we mentioned before, there's no Torah prohibition against using it. It's merely a rabbinic penalty. In terms of the rabbinic penalty, so we rely on the validity of the sale for that much. That's probably the most common practice of those that are machmer, but both practices are in use. And then there's another little tweak, which is also very common. And the question is, what one does with whiskeys. And this is also a problem even, fortunately, of the whiskey companies that are owned by Jews, one of them in particular, they do mechiras chametz every year because they're quite interested in that the Jewish community should buy their product, the Efti Yontif. So they actually, Bronfman always made a mechiras chametz for that reason. Seagram's, yeah. Always made mechiras chametz. And so the question is, what to do about whiskey, even people that are generally machmer, so most of them sell their whiskey. For example, the Rosh Hashiva, our Rosh Hashiva, Rav Henoch Shlita, sells his whiskey, sells nothing else of his own possessions at Chametzik. But the whiskey he sells, and I once asked him why. So he told me because there was a Shuva of the Pnei Yoshua, which is not the Pnei Yoshua, it's the Pnei Yoshua's grandfather, the beginner Shlomo, who wrote that whiskey is not considered Chametz Gomer. It's a very singular position. The Chofetz Chaim, in fact, paskins that whiskey is considered chametz gomer. But since it's only a chumrah, anyhow not to sell a chametz on Pesach, and there's a sheet that it says that it's not chametz gomer. So I'm on that. There's some Heilige Yidin, that one of them that I know, that before Yontif, he takes a few bottles of whiskey that he owns, and he goes to one of his chaverim that sells chametz, and he says, this is yours as a matana gemura. And he absolutely means it. You could drink it as much as you want, and you don't have to give it back to me. And I have no expectations of getting it back, and I have no pay this. And he means it. If you know him, he's 100% earnest. You could take it if you want to drink up the whole thing. He will not have the least bit of pay there. He's not going to throw it out. It's worth money. But you sell it, he'll give it to you. He gives it to you. Mamash Balev Shalom. If you come back after the under, you give it back, you didn't drink it, he'll accept it back from him. But he has no expectation that you have to give it back to him. That's, you know, how far some go. And being Mekayim, the Goyim's Shita. Now, I do want to mention one other thing, and that is if one is traveling east of New York, east of this city, one has to make sure that one does a mechiras chametz, which is going to take place on the day before. I mean, if you're just slightly to the east, within the same time zone, I don't think it's going to make much of a difference. I don't think that you're going to get to the Zman Easter before we're going to sell it. I don't think any place in the eastern United States, I don't think it's going to be that much earlier than us. Even if we go all the way up to Maine, I don't think there's going to be a problem. But if you travel, for example, to Europe, or to Eretz Yisrael, and you're going to be there, well, as we know, the time zones are 5, 6, 7 hours ahead. Which means, we sit down, when do we sell chametz in this country? We sell chametz in the hour that we have between the Zman, the time one may stop, has to stop eating chametz, and the time one may not have benefit from the chametz. And that hour is when we sell the chametz, after everyone finished eating it. So let's say, typically, it's 10 o'clock in the morning here. By that time, it's 5 o'clock in the afternoon in Eretz Yisrael. After the Zman Issa comes, which is 1 hour before Chatzos, I can't do Mechiras Chametz anymore. There's a famous case, a guy that forgot to do it, and he came a whole tshuva with the Rode Behuda, he owned a distillery, and he somehow didn't have a Mechiras Chametz, if he's allowed to sell the Chametz, the Rode was Mechadish, a heter for him, so that he should be able to sell under certain circumstances the Chametz, Erev Yontif in the afternoon. Chidish Nifla. But therefore, anyone that's traveling to the east of this country has to be sure to tell the Rav that I need a Mechiras Chametz on Yud Gimel the day before. Now, one may ask the following question. Let's say one goes to Eretz Yisrael, and one does the Mechiras Chametz in Eretz Yisrael. Now, I'm a Chutz La'aretz person. And so therefore, on the end of Shvi Yishol Pesach in Eretz Yisrael, they call in the Goy and they buy the Chametz back. Does that affect me? I'm not allowed to own chametz for another 24 hours with the Rabbanim. So how does that affect me? So I once raised this question with one of the Rabbanim in the Eid HaRedis many, many years ago. And he told me a very simple chesed, which is very simply correct. We have a principle in the halacha that one cannot acquire something against one's will. Acquisition is dependent upon my will. The end of Yom Tov, I don't want my chametz back. Why? Because in Eretz Yisrael, it's true, the Rav brought it back, and the guy wants to give it to me, but I don't want it, because it's for me, it's Yom Tov, so I don't want it for another 24 hours. Bal Korchach, against my will, nobody can give me anything. So it's not my chametz. So therefore, the halacha is, it's not a problem leaving it there for the duration of Chag until the Yom Tov actually ends. Okay, Rabbi, this is just a general introduction to principles, and that's from next week at 8 o'clock on Tuesday. I have a share of how to roll up my sleeves and actually cash it out for Pesach.